Welcome back to the Max Bell Arena, site of the Goals for Dreams charity hockey event. Going to get underway starting at 3:30 this afternoon. There's going to be an autograph signing beforehand. Live coverage available here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined up in the press box here at Max Bell Arena with my colleague Ezra Ginsberg. Richard Pollock is here. Dave Manuk is here. Michael Remus is back at studio. Producer Tim is here. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. We're going to sort of shift focus away from the lockout now, thankfully. I think we've reached our maximum on the lockout.
Only 9 weeks, Drew.
Only 9 weeks, yeah. Exactly.
And the summer.
We have a tie game here, Drew.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I guess it looks like it ends in a tie.
Yeah.
Game. A good game that went underway down below us between the Fort Garry team and the Dakota team.
Yep.
And I understand that Shea Weber's on his way up, so he's going to be joining us. So we'll be able to talk to some of the various participants in this great charity game that's going to be starting here at Max Bell Arena in a little while.
See him across the rink, so he's walking over
here. There you go. Here he comes there. He's got the whole playoff beard still.
Walking by former teammate from the Olympics, Jonathan Toews.
Yeah, guys, I'll have to just hold back and not ask for his autograph now. I'll just have to wait in line like everybody else.
We appreciate your professionalism there, Ezzy.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, but, you know, it's great. For fans that are on their way here, I think the autographs start at 2 o'clock, and they're going to be in groups of five, so definitely a good opportunity to get an autograph from your favorite player who's in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you have tickets, of course, you'll be down here. And if you don't, you can hear the entire action live on TSN 1290. It's a thrill to be broadcasting this game. It's a fun charity event.
You're not broadcasting it.
I'm not broadcasting it. Don't worry. You won't. After 3 o'clock, you won't hear from me anymore. We're going to turn it over to the professional play-by-play guys. Munns and Bayak and Shane Knight is obviously playing in the game. Rick Ralph will be up here. I think it'll be you'll hear a plethora of all your favorite characters from TSN 1290, right? Can we call them characters?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
The whole TSN 1290 family.
Yeah. So we're going to break down this. Are we going to break it down? Forward lines, defensive lines?
Yeah, you want to call right what the pairings are?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll see about that right now. Looks like Shay's joined us up here in the press box, so you can jump on with us coming up in a couple minutes. We'll get him outfitted with the headphones and everything. Shea Weber is going to be playing on a team with Mark Stewart. He was the captain of the team. Chris Mason, his colleague with the Nashville Predators, and Colin Wilson. Shane, thanks for joining us up here. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. You know, exciting sort of charity event. Is this the first one you've played in since the lockout got underway?
Yeah, it is. Obviously, it's a special one, and it's fun to be here.
Shay, first of all, have you ever been on a team where Chris Mason was the first overall draft pick?
I don't know. No, I can't say I have, but you know what? He's a great guy, a good goalie, so he's definitely deserving.
I suspect you might be hearing about that in the locker room. Well, assuming there is a locker room eventually, you might be hearing about how he got drafted first overall ahead of you.
Yeah, without a doubt. He was giving it to me the other night, kind of giving it to all the boys, but he's such a good guy. I mean, he's great teammate, good person, and he makes it a lot of fun.
So how do you come about playing in a game like this? Like, what's the process?
Well, I just got asked. Obviously, I know Laddie a little bit from when we were younger. We played summer hockey together, so he asked if we'd participate, and we weren't doing anything this weekend, so obviously we would love to come up here and help out any way we can.
Are you it's been hanging your shingle in the midst of this lockout? You've been in Nashville, or you've sort of been in BC, the hometown?
No, yeah, I've been in Nashville. I've been down there since before training camp, early September there, just skating and working out with the guys down there, and then obviously hoping something gets figured out.
Shay, obviously the lockout is unfortunate for everybody, and everyone's hoping that this whole thing is over very soon. How important is it for the players to, you know, come out and, you know, give the fans a bit of a show and raise money for charity, you know, with all this depressing news going on?
I think it's huge. Obviously, we'd like to be playing right now, but the situation where we're not, so we have a little bit of time that we normally wouldn't have, and for us to be able to give back to people that need it, it's something that we're going to jump at any chance to do.
Yeah, people here are really excited. On the fans we've been talking to are all, it's going to be pretty packed in here. Shea, do you have the option of going overseas? Is that something you considered, or you're...
I mean, maybe later on. I mean, it was hoping something would be done by now. It's a process, though. It's, you know, I don't know, it's tough to hear what Gary said the other day about taking 2 weeks off. It's tough to negotiate when you're not talking, but, you know, we're still hopeful as much as we can be, and for now we'll do this, have some fun, and hopefully something gets done.
And we'll just, you know, on that point, last time this came around, you were playing in junior, and then you played in the great team in Grand Forks, so won the gold there, and then eventually came up with Nashville through Milwaukee. first time around for you, do you talk to kind of the veterans about what it was like last time and kind of compare and contrast, or are you kind of just, is it totally new to you, everything?
It's completely new as far as being so involved. I mean, obviously being involved in a lot of the meetings and conference calls, you get to learn a lot about the business side. And it's good to have guys like Hal Gill, Mike Fisher, and guys that have been through that lockout before. And, you know, they definitely compare what it's been like in the past and now. And it's still tough for them to get a real read because it's two different situations. We seem a lot closer this time than we were last, but yet nothing's getting done, so it's tough.
You know, in addition to, you mentioned you've been skating in Nashville with, you know, some of your teammates who have still been down there. You know, is that enough to stay sort of, you know, in game shape for whenever this, hopefully this lockout ends and, you know, it's going to, you know, hit the ground running? There might be a week, maybe 2 weeks of sort of training camp. Is that enough, or are you doing a lot of sort of off-ice activities to keep the legs fresh and everything else?
Yeah, we're still training. I mean, we train 4 or 5 times a week and before we skate, and then we go out and skate. And I think they're good skates. I think we've been practicing and trying to keep in as good a game shape. Obviously, it's not exactly, you're not hitting, you're not getting that that cardio. But I think for the most part, guys are working hard and trying to stay focused as tough as it is right now.
Shay, obviously today's Charity Classic is all about having a good time, putting on a show for the fans, raising money for charity. But over on Team Lab, they've got some good players. Have you guys been talking in the dressing room? Is your job to shut down Jonathan Toews? Are you going to be taking him out in the corner, or what's the strategy for Team Stewart today?
You know what? I haven't even seen their roster yet, so maybe I should take a look to see who I'm going to be matched up against here. Maybe there's some cops I don't even know about. They got some good mitts, so we're going to have to...
Yeah, you got Thomas Dean on one cop team over here.
Yeah, you got old veteran. He knows the wars from the 1980 Winnipeg Jets. And Sean Chornley played junior hockey. He's one of the cops also that helped organize this event. So he played some junior hockey. So, you know, they might be gunning for you there.
Yeah, they might be. Yeah, that's no doubt some moves we haven't seen before.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, certainly before the lockout happened, it was certainly an active off-season for you, you know, in terms of your contract status and everything else. You know, by the sounds of it, you'll probably be, you know, a Nashville Predator, you know, probably for your entire career. If that ends up coming to fruition, you know, what would it mean as a player to spend your entire career with one team if that's what ends up happening?
It'd be great. I mean, you look at the amount of guys that do it, and it's kind of rare now with, the way the NHL is now and the age of free agency. It's tough for someone to spend their whole career be special, especially to grow up in a market like that that's grown so much since I've been there in the 7 and 8 years. I mean, it's the hockey's grown and the youth hockey's so big down there now. It's it'd mean a lot to us.
The Olympics. Yeah, sure. There's no hockey on in Canada, as you know. You know, you get your junior stuff, but every Tuesday TSN showing an old classic game. So you've been a part of a couple of them, but a couple of weeks ago they showed the 2010 Olympic game. Have you actually rewatched that full game before?
No, I'm gonna be honest with you, I haven't. No. If I was in Canada, I probably would watch it on TSN, but there's no TSN down in Nashville, so I haven't seen it. I probably should go watch it.
That was great. It's amazing to me, you know, you're rewatching the game, you watch it with so much emotion. We're like, you're playing. But how amazing the quality is and the tape passes and the level of play is just so incredible. 2014, the Olympics obviously is important to the players, and we've heard that, and it's important to everybody, important to the fans. Do you think that's going to be a part of this next deal, like once it eventually gets done?
Well, I think it'll be a part of the deal. I don't think it'll be a big part. You think it would just be a smaller issue compared to the things they're talking about right now. But I think as a player, you want the best players in the world playing for their country, and the Olympics is one of the biggest stages in the world. You know, it doesn't get much better than that, and much bigger. So you should have the best at whatever sport it is, and the best person in the world, competing for their country.
That was a bit of a coming out party for you. I mean, we already knew you were a great defenseman, but just playing in Nashville, you don't get as much exposure. And you talked about Drew Doughty and Duncan Keith, who was in the game today. How much did that do for your confidence in terms of playing at like the highest level possible, being arguably the best defenseman in the tournament? Like, what did that do for you?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, I didn't look at it like that. It was just so special for me to be able to put on the country's jersey at home with all my family and friends there. It was, an experience I'll definitely never forget. It's something that people don't even get a chance to do that, playing your home country for an Olympic medal. And it's something that it's going to be tough to, you know, match, but I'm sure there'll be some other good moments down the line of my career.
But that's why it's so important, I think. You know, Canada, obviously playing in Canada, you got that opportunity in Vancouver, and Sochi for the, you know, a lot of the Russian players. We've heard, you know, Alex Ovechkin has been, he's been very honest. He said, you know, even if the NHL isn't participating in the 2014 Olympics, I'm going to be there by hook or by crook. You know, I want that same experience. You know, and when you look back, you know, at the end of your career, whenever that may be, hopefully in, you know, a number of years away from now, 15, 20 years, you still got left in you, I'm going to predict.
Hopefully.
Yeah. You know, how important will that be? You know, you can sit down, you can, you know, can tell your kids, you can tell your grandchildren someday, that is going to be, you know, I represented Canada on, you know, in Canada with the rabid crowd that was, you know, engulfing us.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be special. Obviously, once you have kids and you sit down with them and you want to watch the game, or, you know, you tell them about it and they don't believe it until you show them, and it's, I think that's going to be almost surreal and kind of crazy for them to believe that, you know, you were part of something like that.
Shay, we all know that, you know, the current CBA negotiations are obviously a process, and, you know, you have to let it take its course, but, you know, are you ever sitting around with some of the players and, you know, one day you guys are just saying, you know, we really want this to end? Because I know that you guys are all competitive guys and you guys want to be on the ice and playing and you want this season. Does it ever reach a point, or do you have to just stay patient and realize that this is going to end when it's going to end?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's a really tough negotiation. I mean, it's tough to get a read on what's going on. And, you know, like you said, we sit there and we want to play as much as we do. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of guys go over to Europe. I think that they got sick of sitting around and they need to go play and get that competitiveness and the intensity and the battle. And you miss that. It's not the same in practice. You're not hitting. You still get a little competitive with your teammates. I mean, you still get fired up and close to fighting once in a while, but it's definitely not the same as a real game.
Lucky you get to play in, I guess, the arena that your coach in Nashville, Barry Trotz, coached in once upon a time before he made his ascension to the NHL. So
yeah, that's right.
No coaches today, though.
Yeah.
Actually, Bogosian's coaching because Zach's on the injured list.
Right.
I think he's coaching for Team Stewart today.
Yeah.
We'll let you go on this one last question, Shay. You know, up here in Winnipeg, you know, rabid hockey market. We don't have to tell you that. Nashville, sort of surprising to a lot of people how passionate the fans down there in Nashville are. I spent some time in the southern U.S. and I got to see, you know, how rabid those fans are and how passionate they are for their Nashville Predators. You know, can you speak to the atmosphere of playing a game in a sort of non-traditional hockey market?
It's unbelievable. I mean, you have to go down there to see it. It's until we played in the playoffs against Vancouver, a Canadian team, I don't think people realized. I mean, people came down and they were just like, wow, this place is electric. Like, it's loud. They're crazy. They love it. I mean, they respect us around town. You know, they see you, they recognize you, but they just let you do your thing. And, they're passionate. I mean, they love the game, and it's a lot of fun to play down there.
What's it called? I think the Cell Block 308 or something?
303, yeah.
303,
yeah,
there you go. Cell Block 303 in Nashville. Shea Weber, he's the defenseman for the Nashville Predators. He's going to be a defenseman, presumably a defenseman at least, for Team Stewart today in the Goals for Dreams charity hockey game coming up here at Max Bell Arena. Shea, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, Shea. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live at the Max Bell Arena on the campus of the University of Manitoba for the Goals for Dreams charity hockey event. It's a great event. It benefits the Dream Factory and the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba. Team Ladd versus Team Stewart will get underway at about 3:30 Winnipeg time here on TSN 1290. If you've got tickets, we'll see you down here. If you don't, you can hear the entire game live on TSN 1290. In case you missed any of this program, any of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also download it off tsn1290.ca. We just heard from Shea Weber. I believe Jonathan Toews is almost on his way up. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be hearing from some other players that are going to be joining us high above the ice surface. This is I like this press box over here.
Yeah, this is nice.
Yeah, it's
nice.
We've
got the open glass in front of us, open air.
Yeah.
This arena.
And
it almost feels like you're on the ice.
And we've actually paid some of the players to shoot pucks at you from down on the ice.
Yes,
so
and unfortunately, Shea Weber is one of them, and I believe he's been clocked at 103 kilometers an hour.
That's probably going to hurt you, I got to tell you. See that? Yeah. You may want to prepare for that. You know, pull out a helmet or something along those lines. Just a great event here. You know, these charity events are always a lot of fun. Everybody goes in with the right attitude, of course. You know,
that's right.
You know, you don't play in a charity event if you know you're giving up your time. You don't play in these events
that's
unless
true.
You really want to.
Well, there was the Mike Keane Charity Classic 2 days ago.
That's right. A lot of the old veteran NHLers were in town.
Lanny McDonald and others obviously out there, and you know it is great because at the end of the day you know, all fans want to see is their team, and you know, well, everyone wants the NHL back, and that's what that's at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. We realize, you know, it's a, you know, there's a lot potentially to come in these negotiations, but you know, as soon as this event was created, everybody said, you know, I want to be here, and that's why it sold out.
I mean, that's why it sold out. I think this place is going to swarm with children. You know, a lot of kids who can't necessarily,
sure,
you know,
autographs, yeah.
Yeah, autographs, and they can't necessarily see their players playing at the MTS Center whenever that happens again. I think this place is going to be jam packed with the kids. I hope you guys brought earplugs because I suspect it's going to be quite the loud atmosphere.
Andrew Ladd's on his way up here.
Yeah, it looks like Andrew Ladd's crossing the ice here. He's going to come join us up in the press box, presumably. So we'll be glad to talk to him. We obviously heard him a fair bit here on the TSN 1290 airwaves.
It's got to be freezing wearing a t-shirt
like this.
Yeah,
you know, Andrew, you got to dress well for this. It's cold up here.
Well, see, Andrew's just getting on the ice early so he can get a good feel of the ice conditions.
That's right.
To get an advantage over Mark Stewart. That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, exactly. Gets his team out there for a pregame skate, some sort of thing of that nature. Should be. And there's a lot of fun events, a lot of fun contests, I think, that are scheduled today during this event. So, you know, it'll be a hockey game, but it'll also be a little bit more than that. Here he comes, Andrew Ladd, joining us up here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How you doing, Andrew? Good.
Nice to see you.
There you go. You can put those ones on, and we'll get chatting with you. There you go. How you doing?
Oh, I am busy right now, but
I assume late night, you know, strategizing, you know, trying to figure out, you know, Mark Stewart's weaknesses, you know, make sure you know which guys to target, you know, who had some off-season surgery, be sure to hack the bone there in that sort of case.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff like that over a couple drinks. So no, it was good.
That's the best way to strategize, usually with a couple drinks.
Yeah.
You know, what's it like, you know, it's sort of attaching your name to an event of this nature? You know, you call up all of your colleagues, a lot of guys from your time, you know, in Chicago, especially up here. I believe you went down to Chicago, played in their charity event as well. Is that right?
Yeah. No, it's been great. I mean, just the support we have, you know, like you said, from the players coming in from all over, you know, Canada and the U.S., and you know, the businesses that helped put this together and raise money for what we're doing tonight has been amazing. So it's been fun to be a part of. It's been a lot of work, but I've had some extra time to help out.
You know, we've heard a lot of positive things. A lot of kids are going to be down here. We were talking about that and seeking out autographs and getting to see the guys that haven't got to see this year yet.
Yeah,
I guess we have to ask the obligatory lockout questions. You know, what's similar to, we just had Shea Weber on, similar to, and you know, obviously know him from BC playing together as kids, but your first time around, first kick of the can, I guess, in terms of lockout. Last time you were playing for the Hitmen, you came up through the Carolina system. How's this whole process been for you?
It's different. I mean, obviously you don't know what it's going to be like until you go through it. It's tough to stay patient, and you know, when really all you want to do is play hockey. But I think you look at you know, how this is going to affect us in the future. And, you know, we got great leadership, and everyone has done a great job of keeping everybody informed. So that has made it a lot easier on guys. I think talking to guys who went through it last time, that was one of the problems, is not everybody was informed. And there was, you know, a select group that was making all the decisions, which, you know, didn't help anyone's case. So, you know, it's not a lot of fun, really, to be honest, but it's part of the business. I mean, you learn at a young age in hockey that it's a business, you know, it's all part of it.
You know, we were talking not with Mark Stewart, but we know Mark Stewart had first overall pick. He took Chris Mason. You know, who did you take first overall in the draft for this
one? I went with the goalie, too. I took Reimer.
You took with Reimer? Okay,
yeah. So I don't know how much sleep Mace got last night, but I think I might have.
You probably do know how much.
But I assume you know, it was getting, you know, probably 11 o'clock, 11:30. You looked over at James and said, James, you know, time to, you know, hit the sack. Got to get into game shape for tomorrow.
8:30, I tucked him in. So
perfect. There you go. Professionalism, you know, first and foremost with these charity games. That's important.
You know, Andrew, we mentioned your, obviously, the connection, 2010 Chicago Blackhawks team that won the Stanley Cup. And obviously, I'm just looking at the roster. Is it a coincidence that on your team is Troy Brouwer, Duncan Keith, Jonathan Toews? Did that just work out? Was that the luck of the draw, or was that designed?
No, it might have been planned. Actually, Duncan's flights, booked three different flights and they were all canceled, so he's actually
he's a late scratch.
Oh, okay. So that's unfortunately. But
so which one of us is suiting up in this place?
Oh God,
I don't know. You would flip a coin. I don't know.
I'll just put a Patrick Kane jersey on.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it'll take too long for people to figure that one out. But yeah, no, I mean that's all part of it. It's fun to play with guys you've played with in the past, and obviously hockey takes you in all sorts of different directions, and to be able to hook up for something like this is a lot of fun.
So where have you been spending the most of your time? You've been in Winnipeg and BC.
I've been here full time. My wife works in town, and so we've been here, and she's pregnant. I think is
congratulations on that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So we've been here, just going, staying there, and seeing the doctors, and doing all that part of it, and
hasn't been that
working
cool
out and skating.
No,
you know what? I don't mind it. So it's not minus 40 yet, so that's good, right?
Yeah. Well, you're used to it. You spent a year here already. I mean,
yeah. Although people say it wasn't the coldest winter.
It really wasn't.
So
yeah. Drew's been saying for years, you know, the global warming is only going to help Winnipeg. Not
yeah.
We talk, you know, playing in Winnipeg, Andrew. You played in Carolina, played in Chicago, and then had the time in Atlanta. The difference in Chicago obviously has that history, and Winnipeg is a hockey history, obviously, that period of time when the Jets weren't here. Can you talk about, I guess, the microscope that you play under here, as opposed to even Chicago when you have the Bears and the Cubs and the Bulls and all that stuff? How different is it?
It's totally different. You know, I think it's just the microscope moves to outside the rink a lot more and
right, yeah.
In the community, but I think it's that's fun too. You know, there's such a great group of people here in Winnipeg that are always willing to help out, and you know, nice about when you're meeting, and then they don't you know, they don't give you too hard of a time, so we haven't started losing too much, so
yeah,
we'll see about that. But no, it's been great to be involved in the community, and you know, I like that pressure, having that pressure of having all eyes on you. I think as an athlete, it pushes you to bigger and better things.
Right. And you look at the roster. I mean, the other team on Team Stura, you have Olli Jokinen, off-season addition to the squad. I guess, you know, we don't know when the season's going to start. Hopefully, it starts soon. But the off-season moves and the team going has added players. Olli's an established, you know, big center, add some size to the front. You know, what do you think of the squad when the season eventually starts?
Well, yeah, I liked what we did in the summer. I think Olli is going to be a huge addition. He's a big, strong guy who could skate, and then really just a veteran that will give us so much experience up front and a long season that goes a long way in helping out a fairly young group. So, and then the same thing with Ponikarovsky, is another big body that's really going to help us out. And you saw the Los Angeles Kings and what they did,
exactly,
and the big bodies they had. So, you know, we need guys to take another step in their development, and the young guys, and need to take that step forward as a team. But those guys are going to help out a lot.
Andrew, we'll let you go on this last question. Obviously, the autograph signing is coming up sometime pretty soon here. You know, looking at Mark Stewart's team, who's the one guy you got to shut down there? Who's going to be the key to victory if you prevent him from scoring?
Shane O'Brien.
Let's go. I'm going to say...
Well, Mike Richards looked pretty dangerous in that rooftop ball hockey game. So
yeah, that's true. I'm going to go Colin Wilson.
Colin Wilson.
We've been skating with him a couple times. He's got some great hands, and I'm sure he'll want to put on a little show for
the hometown crowd.
Family, yeah.
Alrighty, so. Well, that'll get underway here in about 90 minutes' time. Andrew Ladd, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll let you sign some autographs and get changed, and of course, got a big pregame Newt Rockne-type speech ready for the team, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, no, thanks for having me, and thanks for helping out, guys.
Alrighty, thanks, Andrew. Take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the Max Bell Arena on the campus of the University of Manitoba. The Goals for Dreams charity hockey event gets underway at 3:30 with puck drop. I think the doors are going to be opening up in a couple of minutes. Autograph signing, lots of excitement down here at the arena. If you have tickets, we'll see you soon. If you don't, you can listen to the entire event live on TSN 1290.
Drew, I've just been informed by Dave Manuk that the lineup for your autograph signing is apparently around the entire arena. So
really?
I guess Richard's going to have to take over the hosting duties for you, obviously, because everyone wants that autograph. So
am I going to have to go sign autographs, kiss babies, do my whole politician thing? Is that what I'm going to have to do?
Yeah. When you're eventually mayor, Drew, we'll remember you.
Well, Thomas Steen's playing in the game today. Thomas Steen, city councilor, of course. What team is he on? He's on...
he's on the Cops? He's team on Ladd and the Cops.
Yeah. Andrew Ladd. He's playing on Andrew Ladd's team.
Sorry, so, yeah.
You know, both teams, I mean, you look at Andrew Ladd's team, very, you know, the forwards, obviously, very good with Ladd himself, Jonathan Taves. He's got his teammate Brian Little there. But you look at Team Stewart, and we had Shea Weber on, and you look at the defensemen that they have, you know, it's Olli Jokinen and Mike Richards. It's going to be a fun game.
Speaking of fun game, joining us here now on the Legal Curve Hockey Show, Jonathan Taves is up in the booth. Jonathan, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. How are you doing?
My pleasure. I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Big game tonight in front of the hometown team. The first time, I guess, playing as an NHLer in Winnipeg. Is that right? You were supposed to be here earlier, had this pesky lockout not gotten in the way.
That's true. That's true. I guess we're making up for that that date I had marked on my calendar. That's back right. In October. We're supposed to come here and play for the Jets, or play against the Jets, and... you know, I guess this will have to do for now.
How disappointing was it to sort of miss out on that opportunity? I'm sure you would have enjoyed playing here last year. Schedule didn't work out that way. Now this year, you know, like I said, this pesky lockout gets in the way of that.
I mean, it's disappointing not to get the chance to come back here and play in front of Winnipeg fans. And I mean, I spent the whole year last year, watching some of my close friends here in Winnipeg and just hearing the things they had to say about what it was like to play here in Winnipeg and the excitement, but. Even beyond that, we all know how disappointing it is with what's gone on and with the lockout and just the fact that it's gone this far. It definitely doesn't feel necessary. So it's just feels like we're losing a lot of time. It's unfortunate.
You've been one of the sort of the more outspoken NHLPA members regarding the lockout. You know, is that something that you just feel passionately about this topic, and that you know, sort of volunteered to come and sort of be the one of the faces of the players' side, or is it something that sort of came about? They asked you to sort of take on a leadership role in regards to the public stance in the lockout.
No, I don't think anyone asked you to do that. But I mean, personally, I feel like it's everybody's duty as a player to take part and to care about this sort of thing. And we all love the game, and we grew up idolizing our NHL stars and dreaming of playing in the NHL. And here we are. You know, you work hard to get to this point, and you work hard to earn a living playing hockey, and you appreciate every day that you can play the game. And it's a tough thing to go through, because you got to stand up for yourself and you got to do what's right, but it's hard to reach out to fans and have them understand what you're going through at the same time.
How important are these sort of charity games then? Because obviously you'd rather be playing NHL games, real games with the roar of the crowd and everything. So, you were involved in the big Chicago game that I understand was a rousing success. You had 10,000 people, even more than that apparently, out in Chicago for your game.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was great. I think these are great. So, I mean, obviously Andrew Ladd and Mark Stewart and the guys here in Winnipeg have done a great job. And, you have guys coming from all over, and it's exciting. So, we want to play hockey. We want to play in front of the fans and give them something to watch and something to get excited about. And if you can find a great cause to donate to and donate your time and effort, it's a win-win for sure.
Jonathan, obviously last year you had the injury and you missed some time. You missed a couple months with the Chicago Blackhawks last year. How are you feeling? And if the season were to start, in the next few weeks or months, are you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready. I mean, I feel great. I've been talking about that in the last week or so. That it's one of the things I've taken advantage of is this time off to make sure I'm 100%. And it's pretty rare that you get the opportunity to take care of your body. Normally, if you're playing in the playoffs, you're going to the World Championships. Right. You're playing till late May and almost June if you go to the Cup final. We did a couple years ago, and you're back at it in early September. So it's rare that you get that chance to really kind of hit the reset button and let your body unwind a little bit and definitely feel ready now. So
you mentioned and sort of that you started feeling better and you got back onto the ice, and then you sort of started feeling not as well as you had initially when you came back from that concussion last year. How hard is it, sort of the push and pull, to get yourself as healthy as possible while you see your teammates going through the daily, the daily battles in the NHL? How bad, the burning desire to get back on the ice, weighing that versus the need to be healthy when you do so?
Yeah, it's always a natural reaction for any player to you're taught just to play through things since you're a kid, and you find a way just to play through it. And doesn't matter, where you're aching, where you're hurting. You never seem to be 100%, but this is one of those injuries you can't really go through with that attitude, and you definitely have to deal with it and make sure that you are 100%, because head injuries affect the rest of your life too, and it's a pretty serious thing. So I definitely I felt great in the playoffs, and there were no lingering symptoms by any means, but I think the treatment I got last week in Atlanta was just kind of one of those things to, like I said, hit the reset button and just make sure I'm back to 100%.
Talk about the lockout, Jonathan. You know, it comes out recently that Gary Bettman wants to impose a two-week moratorium on conversations. What do you have to say about that?
Well, again, like I just said, I think it's sad that it's gotten to this point. I mean, if there was a deal done tomorrow, it would still be disappointing mm-hmm. that it took this long to do it. Andy. And you know, the fact that the league and the owners have planned this for such a long time, and they, you know, I'm sure if you were a fly on the wall in one of those rooms last year, they would have said that they were willing to take a lockout this far. It was they used it as a first resort thing to try and get what they want out of us, and until they're happy, this is going to keep going. So, you know, as players, we've worked very hard. We've sacrificed so much, especially the guys that have been part of the previous lockouts. They understand that it's not just about the dollars and cents. It's about standing our ground, and we work hard for the contracts that we earn, and that's what it's about. So it's definitely disappointing that we can't find a partnership and a way to reason with each other, and it's got to be a lockout as a first resort. So, you know, and you see that he's just going to sit back and take 2 weeks off, yeah. And it just gets more and more disappointing by the day. So I you know, I really don't know what to say about it anymore.
You talk about the 2 weeks we were talking about before you guys came on. You know, the 2 weeks obviously lines itself with, you know, the 15th and the 30th of the month.
Yeah.
It's no coincidence. I mean, we don't think, at least.
Right.
Does that, you know, when those dates hit, when that's when you'd usually have a deposit into your bank account, do those days sting any more than any other days, or it's just part of the whole process and the frustration?
I mean, like I said, we're already all at a point where, you know, if you want to look at the league revenue as a whole, that number's going down.
Right.
You know, the decisions that they're making right now is hurting the game. It's hurting the league as a whole, and just the way fans view the sport, especially in the United States. And it's not even about that anymore. It's almost an ego-driven thing. And you know, like I said, as players, we've made so many sacrifices to try and make something work, and it's still not good enough. So, you know, they have their plan. They're sticking to it, and there's not much you can do about it.
Is there a point for you as a player, if this continues to drag on, where you say, hey, by a certain date, you have to say the date, obviously, I have to consider looking over at Europe or playing somewhere else and, you know, maybe getting primed for the World Championships if this completely falls apart and nothing ever happens? Does that go through your mind, and in the back of your mind, hey, I might have to, you know, I want to play? You'd be tapped to play in the World Championships. I mean, I'd say that's for sure.
I think that's a safe bet, yeah.
So is that something that you have to consider at some point?
I think so. I mean, I'm a hockey player, and that's kind of what I trained myself to do since I was a kid. A great opportunity to be able to play professionally, and the great thing is that there's jobs elsewhere. And I mean, I grew up an NHL fan and a hockey fan here in North America, and you know, I've spent 5 great years in Chicago, and the fans there are the best, and it's you know, the greatest city. And obviously, you're gonna see a lot of great hockey fans here in Winnipeg too, and we know what this city is all about.
Yeah, for sure.
It's disappointing for them, because you always owe something to the fans, because without them, you wouldn't have your job to begin with. But when it comes down to it, you know, we want to be in our cities playing the game we love. And, you know, unfortunately, we can't do that yet. So if it comes down to it, we have to do what we have to do.
Have you been spending most of the lockout in Chicago, or you've been sort of traveling around, or just trying to keep your legs and stay fresh skating in Chicago on a regular basis?
Yeah, I've been in Chicago mostly, but been bouncing around to a few of the meetings and stuff like that. And, you know, like you said, we had a charity game in Chicago a few weeks ago, and now I'm here. I'm glad to be back in Winnipeg. I didn't know we had this much snow already, but
it all came last week.
We were out of town a mini. Yeah. We came back, and
it's nice to see nothing's changed much. So, but no, it's always great to be back.
Jonathan, Drew mentioned Chicago, and obviously Andrew Ladd, Troy Brower, part of that team again. Is there any chance, I know, you know, we're switching away from the lockout a little bit here, but I know that's what everybody wants to talk about because that's why everybody's here to see you guys play.
People are leaving the lockout.
Yeah, the crowd, there's people here right now waiting for, you know, their favorite player's autograph. Obviously, you're one of those guys. Is there any chance we're going to see a bit of a, you know, Chicago Blackhawks reunion line, or is that something that you guys haven't even talked about yet?
Oh, I'm sure we'll line it up. You know, we definitely saw it in Chicago a few weeks ago. We got a lot of guys from our old Cup team, and you know, those were the glory days. So we had a moment where we're kind of living in the past there a little bit, but might see it a little bit today too, I'm sure.
You took a good shot at your buddy Mike Richards on Twitter the other day, setting up the ball hockey game, saying, you know, it's going to be a rehash of the 2010 Cup when you guys were able to beat Philadelphia. How was that playing in that ball hockey game on the top of the parkade there?
Oh, I honestly, I hate to break it to you, but I don't even have a Twitter account, so that was probably some kind of imposter.
Oh,
he's on Twitter.
It might have been Ladd. It might have been Ladd.
Okay,
I apologize.
Yeah, okay.
You can give it to Richards though when you're on the ice a little bit.
I will,
bit,
for
you know,
sure.
Give him a couple. You know, have solidarity with your boy
that.
Andrew
there.
For
sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Before we let you go, Jonathan, just wanted to point out our producer, on-site producer here, Tim. Played goal against you when you guys were growing up in Winnipeg. He says you had about three hat tricks against them in one game. So if you want to make any comment about Tim's goaltending ability, you know, feel free. We'll give you an open mic right now.
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure he can take some shots, but you know, I think we both definitely have great memories of playing minor hockey here in Winnipeg too. So
yeah, Dakota was just playing earlier.
I met up with a bunch of my old buddies and actually a few of my coaches that when I played Double A for St. Vitale with the Vics too. And you know, we were reliving old memories too. So those were good times for sure.
There you go, Jonathan Taves, Chicago Blackhawk player, and he's going to be participating in the charity hockey game coming up in about an hour and 15 minutes time here at Max Bell Arena. Jonathan, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're live on TSN 1290, and we are live at the Max Bell Arena on the campus of the University of Manitoba, site of today's NHLPA Goals for Dreams charity hockey event. It's all to benefit the Dream Factory and the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba. Team Andrew Ladd versus Team Mark Stewart going to take to the ice in about 70 minutes time or so. 3:30 puck drop, give or take a couple of minutes. The crowd is filing into this place, signing autographs.
Yep.
A lot of buzz developing in here. It's going to be a fun atmosphere.
Yeah, the lineup is long. I mean, you've got around the corner here.
Well, of course. How often do you get a chance to talk to your hockey heroes this close up?
And the old Jets used to have the Goals for Kids Foundation.
That's right.
They used to go there on a Saturday once a year.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Ellett.
Wasn't it the Jets Wives Carnival?
That's right.
It was to benefit the Goals for Kids Foundation.
Right. Jets Wives Carnival, it's funny that you mentioned that. We remember we were little guys. Tim was probably too little at this point. I'm showing
Tim's
my age.
Tim's the same age as you.
No, he's not.
No, Tim's younger.
Whatever.
Are you kidding me?
He remembers it. Maturely, he's far more mature than you are.
Absolutely. Okay. It's not even a debate. But, you know, that old Jets Wives Carnival was great. I remember the year that Timo Salani was a rookie, there's probably 4,000 people in line.
Wow.
I mean, you had to wait for 2.5 hours, and some people did wait for 2.5 hours.
Of course.
So this is fantastic. It's going to be a lot of fun here. And if you're on your way here, if you're lucky enough to have a ticket to this game, there's already tons of people here, as you know, and it's going to be lots of fun again.
Exactly right. We heard from Jonathan Taves. We heard from Andrew Ladd. And we heard from Shea Weber, so in case you missed any of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com. I believe the show will also be available on tsn1290.ca, so you can get it there. Just a lot of fun, a lot of a fun atmosphere. You know, we took last week off, so we were able to recharge a little bit. And then it's, you know, can't imagine. I mean, I fear that we're going to have to do it next week as well, is spend 3 hours talking lockout. At least this, you know, 90 minutes is still too many minutes to talk lockout. But at least it's a little bit of a reprieve in being able to talk to the Ladd and
well, you know, look at it this way,
Weber.
We're at November 16th. I mean, last year you were talking about the Jets' start and the coming up of a December, you know, upcoming December road homestand and all that stuff. And you don't have that now. You're not talking about those things. You're not into the game. It's there's really nothing good comes of it. And and talking to the players here, talking to Andrew Ladd, talking to Shea Weber, you know, and talking to Jonathan Toews, they all exude frustration at the process.
Well,
they exude frustration, and we're sitting here saying 50-50. I mean, at this point in time, we've been pretty impartial throughout the whole thing, saying that both sides need to realize that we realize the solution, but 50-50 and player contracting rights generally staying the same. I mean, if you probably ask those guys all off the record now, that'd be fine. Probably say, yeah, you know, just make sure you pay us for the contract they gave us. And does the NHL have the right to ask for those things? Sure, they can ask for anything they want, but doesn't
mean,
smell right.
No, it doesn't pass the smell test, as it were. It's not kosher or anything like that. The quote from Jonathan Toews, you know, I thought was most interesting. You know, if there was a deal done tomorrow, it would still be disappointing it took this long to do it.
And we've said that.
And that's exactly. And he understands the situation.
And he seems to. And that echoes our sentiments. And exactly right, Drew. He seems to understand the situation completely, because getting to this point is already a loss. So all you're doing is just going further and further down the scale of loss. You've already lost.
Right.
Everyone's lost. The fans, and we talked about earlier in the show, first and foremost, have lost. Nobody's winning now. So I think that's absolutely, and I think you picking that out is exactly right, Drew. That is the comment, well, I think, personifies what's been going on here.
It's amazing how much goodwill is, you know, there's so much passion for this game. Look at this in here. Never mind in here, though. It's it's a Saturday afternoon in the middle of November.
Yep.
Sort of college football would be at its all-time high right now. It's sort of big time for college football.
Yeah.
You got Chris Cook of the Chicago newspaper sitting at home, listening online to the interview, tweeting out what Jonathan Toews is saying. He's not doing that because nobody's interested. He's doing that because people want to know what Toews has to say.
That's right.
We mentioned the Cell Block 303 guys in Nashville. They're a big part of, Shea Weber mentioned them. Same thing. Cell Block 303 retweeting everything that's going on in regards to this. You know, there's so much passion for this hockey game that, you know, and for this hockey as a sport.
Anything about
hockey. All the goodwill
anything
is being
hockey.
Lost. Of course, anything about hockey. And what do they, and more than anything, what do they want? They want hockey games. But they can't get them. So we get this charity game, and this is a great event, and everybody's happy. And you don't usually see talent of this nature assembled on one ice surface. But if you're not telling me that on this Saturday night, I don't know if the Jets were supposed to play, but
almost all Saturday night.
Probably they probably were. 6 o'clock puck drop. I'm sure. Yeah, in Boston, is that what you're saying, Dave? The Jets were supposed to be in Boston tonight. You're telling me that the entire city of Winnipeg wouldn't really be shut down from 6 o'clock or, you know, 3 o'clock when we'd get on air, you know, all the way through the end of that game or the end of Rick's post-game show? That's all people would want to talk about. Instead, what are we talking about?
Well, Drew, when you talk about player frustration, and we've had Shea Weber on, we've had Andrew Ladd on, we've had Jonathan Toews on, and you can just tell it by the look in their eyes that these guys are frustrated, and
that's true.
You know, it's a really difficult and complex situation when you have guys speaking, and then, you know, everyone kind of, even by nature, get polarized, whether you're taking a side, but you kind of, each comment gets dissected in this, you know, age that we live in, unfortunately, of Twitter, where every single thing that a guy says somehow is pro players, they get criticized, but, you know, it's got to the point where we're in the home stretch here. We're going to find out. And again, the NHL were the ones that weren't serious in the beginning. And, you know, when you say 2-week moratorium, that's not positive for
thing, yeah.
positive thing to hear for fans. And, you know,
I think it's bad. I think it's bad optics for the NHL to do it. You don't have to declare that it's a 2-week moratorium. If you don't talk for 2 weeks, both sides hate each other.
Right.
Everybody hates both sides.
Right.
When you declare, oh, we're taking a 2-week moratorium, the fans and everybody says, well, the owners imposed it, so we hate the owners more or so right now.
Right, Drew, and that's a public relations rock that they're throwing at the NHLPA, and they're saying, okay, 2 weeks, we're not even going to talk to you. We're going to put that out in the public, and then you're going to lose that fourth paycheck, and then you have to make the decision.
Of course it's all about the 30th of the month.
You don't have to rub it in their face.
What do you think he's doing?
Of course, but you and I know that. We talk about net benefit. What is the net benefit to the NHL for declaring publicly this moratorium?
It's all a PR game. That's why they hired Frank Luntz.
But where's the positive PR coming out of that?
Just throwing that to the wayside here.
Their PR?
Now, they're trying to pressure because, as we talked about, you know, that fall-off number for the players is the 55th, is that November 30th. Now, I'm not sure that's exactly correct, but it's around there. So there may be, and so what they're doing is, and Drew, follow me here, you know, the players are asking for more of a share this year, because probably to make up for the thing they're going to lose after the 30th. So this is like the fiscal cliff.
the fiscal. So who's Congress? Who's either going to fall off the cliff, or when are they going to actually pass something that gets this deal done?
It's a heck of a question.
It's funny, guys. From
you
both,
throw your hands up in the air, because that's the only solution we have at this point.
You know, Drew, from both sides, the NHL and the NHLPA this time around, it's almost like, how do you screw your public image up the most, each side? And it's like a textbook on how to do everything wrong. I mean, it's bad enough, and you mentioned this before, it'd be nice if the players didn't speak, and, you know, Gary Bettman has been successful in having a gag order on most of the owners. Obviously, a few guys have spoken
and
said something.
They're all talking off the record, yeah.
They're all talking off the record. You're right, Richie. But everything, this might be the worst. Exactly, Drew. I agree with you 150%.
Wow.
Don't tell us there's going to be a two-week moratorium. First off, why didn't you tell us there was going to be a two-week moratorium in late October, early November?
When you didn't talk for two weeks.
Sure. And now you're telling us, I mean, it's almost like it's obviously a bit of a threat.
Because the fourth and fifth paychecks are a lot harder to stomach than the first and second.
Right.
That's their position.
Right.
We know that. I agree with you. But I don't see why you declare it. You take a two-week moratorium just by not talking to one another.
By the way, I don't think that's going to last 2 weeks, by the way.
I don't think it will either. I think at some point in time, and don't give me the NHL won't return their calls if the NHLPA calls
also
within
true.
The next 2 weeks.
Also true.
This moratorium isn't worth the paper it's written on.
Yeah, and it's past the point of, you know, if you contact the NHL, then you're giving in. And you're not. You don't have to make it. Nobody's forcing you to come to an agreement. You can just reach out. And again, you say, hey, we're sitting here in this room. We're going to meet us here. We're going to be in this room at noon on Monday. By the way, let's stop meeting at 3 o'clock instead of meeting at 9 in the morning and going all day. That's another story entirely.
Well, usually, most people's work days are usually from 3 o'clock till 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, you work for those solid 2 hours. That's more than enough.
And it's funny because these guys are all lawyers for the most part, and they usually know that they might have to be up for 6 o'clock in the morning to go over their notes. Maybe if they have to... It's really funny. I mean, it's I don't think anybody's buying it that these guys really need this two-week break. But just calling it a moratorium or break was a bad mistake.
At the end of the day, the players don't actually want 70% of this year's salary. The owners, I don't think, want all the things they're asking for, the contracting rights. So kicking a 5% rule, as we were talking about earlier in the show, 50-50, pay them over a period of time, a shorter period of time, not 20 years,
right,
and get done.
Exactly. Yep. Just get it done.
But we better go to break pretty quick because our friend of the show, Benji Rothman, is here, and I think he's here for my autograph.
Oh, is that what it is?
So let's...
Let's go to break then. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at the Max Bell Arena on the campus of the University of Manitoba for the Goals for Dreams charity hockey event live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined up here at the Max Bell Arena by my colleagues, Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Gentlemen, Hall of Fame induction sort of took place this week. They definitely took place. They took
sort
place under a bit of a cloud, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I think it's a shame for the players who were inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. Obviously, when it's, you know, they didn't get the loud ovation that they get when they walk onto the ice at Air Canada Centre in Toronto.
Which is a shame.
And I hope they remedy that somehow maybe next year.
Both classes next year.
But the Hall of Fame ceremony did take place, obviously, earlier this week. I wanted to ask you guys, you know, four great players. Pavel Bure, Adam Oates, now the head coach of the Washington Capitals.
Yep.
Joe Sakic. I mean, Richard, your famous Bob Cole impression from the 2002 Olympics.
That game was on Tuesday.
Yes, it was.
I taped it and watched the whole thing.
It was on TSN on Tuesday.
He was the best player in that game by a mile.
Joe Sakic was.
By a mile.
Not Bob Cole.
Bob Cole's the best play-by-play guy of all time.
Right. John Davidson, I think, was doing color of that game.
That was NBC. It was Davidson and Gary Thorne.
Gary Thorne.
Now
that was the feed that we
hockey
got.
Hockey show friend of the show.
Yes, exactly. JD, who was on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And Matt Sundin, obviously, rounding out that class.
Yes. Yep.
Of the four, who's your number one?
No-brainer, Drew. I mean, I've heard this question.
It's a softball.
It's Joe Sakic. I mean, he's the best player of the group. And it's not even close.
Yeah, it's
not even close.
Not even close. If you put up to anybody, any general manager in the league, which of these players do you want? It's Joe Sakic 100 times out of 100. The question then is, who's the second player on the team?
Right. Okay. I'm gonna agree with Richie that Joe Sakic is number one. I think for me, he's a top 10, close to even a top 5 forward of his era.
Of his era?
Of even the last 30 years, but of all time, he's one of the best.
You
and
can discuss
two
it for
cups.
Sure.
Two cups, the Olympics, and you're right.
World Juniors, World Championships, World Cup.
He won everything. He was the best. But you know, number two, you look at Burré, Oates, and Sundin. Now, Burré had the short career, and people are making the argument the next year Lindros should get in because of the fact Burré gone in with a short career, and then you could throw in Cam Neely and for an argument for Lindros. But as far as the second guy, I mean, for me, it's between Oates and Sundin. And then Sundin obviously didn't have the cup, so that's a, you know, and Oates didn't either.
Right. No.
So I mean,
none of the other three.
Only Sakic had the cup.
It was an interesting class because Adam Oates, like Joe Sakic in a sense, was a quiet guy. Mm-hmm. Wasn't? I mean, Sakic. It was in an era where you had a lot of great players.
Joe Sakic didn't need to be loud. Joe Sakic was loud on the ice.
That's right. So I'm just saying, as far as, you know, his accomplishments even, you look at the O2 team, you had Steve Yzerman, you had Mario Lemieux. I mean, you had so many great players. Wayne Gretzky was the GM. I mean, for me, it was a nice class because Adam Oates, for a couple years, maybe even as many as 5 years, playing with Brett Hull in St. Louis, he was by far the best playmaker in the world.
Adam Oates was like arguably the second best playmaker in his generation to Gretzky. Well, Lemieux's in there too, so I mean third to Gretzky and Lemieux.
Yep.
A pure passer, a great pure passer. Adam Oates never won the cup.
Yep.
I believe he made a 97 to Washington.
With Washington when they got swept by Detroit.
Yeah. Was Adam... Sorry?
Remus?
97. 98, they played Philly. That's right. Thank you, Remus. But was Oates, if I had to pick one guy, would it be Oates, Sundin, or Burré? To me, it's a really difficult question. Burré was the most explosive.
Maybe Burré just, I mean, Burré had the dynamic aspect in that short window when he was just, when he was
incredible. And he went to the Cup with Vancouver.
Yeah, 94 when he went to the
Cup. Yeah, and so Sundin never went to the Cup. Sundin... Overall, top to bottom. I mean, the question I think people need to ask is Oates played with Hull.
How much of Oates was Hull?
No. How much of the fact that Matt Sundin played with nobody his entire career should be taken into account? I mean, I think Sundin's probably number two on that list.
You might pick Sundin, and it's funny, when they were having the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremonies, it was Daniel Alfredson that introduced Matt Sundin. And what Daniel Alfredson said about him is he's the greatest Swedish player of all time.
And in the 2006 Olympics, by the way, got to factor that into account.
And that's knowing that Nicholas Lidström is also from Sweden, and you can make the argument he's the greatest Swedish player of all time. Matt Sundin in his prime, and he was consistent. He led the Leafs scoring year after year, almost every year he played for them.
Any success the Leafs had is because they rode
Matt playing with Dmitry Krstić. He's playing with Steve Thomas. He's playing with an older Gary Roberts. I mean, who did he play with in his prime who was actually good? Alexander McGillin? He wasn't in his prime when he played up there. Who was it? Nobody. He didn't play with anybody good. When he played for Sweden, he actually got to play with talent. Now, I always thought that Matt Sundin was a little bit difficult to play with, and he was a little bit more puck on his stick kind of guy than passer. Sure. Still didn't play with anybody good, though. So I think he probably is two. But if it's one game for explosiveness, it might be Burré.
Yeah.
And if it's consistency over a period of time, Adam Oates was great. But I think it's Sundin two for me, Burré three, and Oates four.
Burré has the most probably iconic moments of the bottom of the other three. I mean, obviously Sakic 0-2 is the most iconic. But Burré coming down the wing in Calgary, game 7 in overtime there.
More up the middle.
Sorry, more up the middle. Fine. Jeez. Tough crowd here, I got to tell you. But Burré...
Forehead's a patented forehand deke.
Yeah, the patented forehand...
Or the penalty shot 94 when he got stopped by Richter.
Yes, also a huge factor, but I'm talking about, you know, iconic positive moments. How about
for him?
Because I can still picture him, you know, throwing the gloves
Dylan
off,
Whitman.
Skating up the wing in Calgary. He came up the wing celebrating. How about that? Would you agree with that?
Threw the gloves with Don Whitman making the call.
That's right.
Winnipeg's Don Whitman.
That's right. Obviously we remember Don as a great play-by-play guy.
And that was that's true, Drew. That year was, you know, he was magnificent, and he was magical. You know, I got to see Pavel Bure play in person quite a bit. And if people, you know, let's talk about Jets quickly. The 93 playoffs with, I think it was 93, with Solani and Burré head-to-head.
Yeah.
I remember Burré wasn't great. I'm sorry, Burré was great, and then the Vancouver Papers called out Solani, finished crash.
Yeah.
And then in game 3, Solani came back, scored a hat-trick. That was some of the best back-and-forth action you'll see. One of the best Jets series. I know they lost, but one of the best Jets series.
They lost in overtime at home ice in Winnipeg.
You have to factor in how these players are influential on the next generation. You look at his
on
recently...
our generation.
Yeah, you look at...
Not next, this well, is us. I'm talking about, formative
I'm talking about the next gen... Well, we're getting a little talk
just
here, but
talking.
The next generation of Russian players. You look at a guy like Neil Yakupov, Ilya Kovalchuk, all these guys, they looked up to a guy like Pavel Bure and Sergei Makarov before him as the guys that kind of came over to North America and they really, you know, showed that high skill could really work in the NHL. So it was a great, you know, great draft class. And, you know, if we can go ahead to next year, you've got Scott Niedermeyer, who could potentially go in.
He's a guarantee.
Brendan Shanahan.
So Shanahan got passed over this time.
You've got Rob Blake, and you've got, we mentioned Lindros before.
Rob Blake's a really interesting one, because for me, Rob Blake's a Hall of Famer. I'm not sure if everybody agrees. To me, he was one of the best defensemen of his era, consistently. Yep.
I think
he was the best defenseman in 98 in the Olympics. He was the best defenseman, both to me and voted.
I think the problem with Rob Blake, not the problem, is that maybe people remember his... They might not remember his prime as well as they mentioned the last few years where he still played at a good level for San Jose and they bounced back to Los Angeles and Colorado a little bit. But when he was in his prime, he was just a dominant shutdown defenseman.
And both ways. He was great both ways.
Yeah, of course.
Patented hip check across the boards. To me, Blake's a Hall of Famer. To me, Niedermeyer's first and foremost a guarantee.
Yep.
Shanahan has to get in next year. Yep. I think Lindros is a Hall of Famer, regardless of what you think of him.
You also have Theo.
So you have Theo. So it's an interesting class. I think more highly Blake, maybe others do. I think Blake's a Hall of Famer. Yeah. Maybe not first time around, but he's a Hall of Famer.
See, if Richie and I were on the committee, we'd do this right.
And the committee's thankful that you guys aren't on the committee. But anyways, that's another problem with the Hall of Fame, of course, is we have no idea who the committee is. And that's always been a problem. You don't know who this mysterious band of voters are.
Yeah. Isn't George W. Bush on it?
That would be awkward, I got to tell you. Maybe the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. He was a former owner in baseball. It would be a little awkward if he was on the Hockey Hall of Fame committee there, let me tell you. But Shanahan, to me, should have made it this year.
Yeah, well, you can make that argument that Shanahan, I think you can make a pretty good argument. The one thing about Shanahan, though, scored 600 goals, right? 600 goals.
Yeah.
And it was great for, you know, he went St. Louis and then Hartford and he went over to Detroit and that Primo trade. And then he went Devils was first. And then Rangers and Devils again after. Shanahan, my one issue with Shanahan was he was never really that best player on the team. You know what I mean? I mean, he wasn't really the guy. Brendan Shanahan coming to town. Here's a guy.
Yep.
He would score, and he was great, and he could hit, and he could do all those things.
Yep.
But Brendan Shanahan, to me, was never really, like, the guy. Hall of Fame, to me, a bit is, like, the guy. He's the best player.
The best players that were on their team for a long period
of
time. Yeah.
You can move around, but, like, he was great in Detroit, and, I mean, obviously he scored before
that. But you had Yzerman and Fedorov
that's
and
right.
Lidstrom and
that's right.
on and on.
So,
yeah.
like, where did he rank on his team? Was he always, when they won, was he the third or fourth best player? Is that a Hall of Famer? So I think he ventures a Hall of Famer based on stats. He's more longevity and overall performance than superstar.
Like a Mike Gartner.
Yeah, I never thought of him as a... I look at the Hall of Fame as complete and total superstars. I think of Shanahan a little bit below, but body of work will get him in.
Exactly. Good call with the body of work. And, you know, you guys know I'm more prone to like the physical brand of hockey. And Brendan Shanahan was the type of guy could score 30 goals,
old-time hockey.
And you know, but you're right, Richie. Maybe he wasn't a 55 goal scorer like a Joe Sakic or a Steve Yzerman or those guys or Bure. But he'll get in because he was really good and he's top 10 goals of all time.
Yeah, overwhelming.
Top 15 maybe.
I always like these arguments. There's no wrong answer, but it does get the fire burning.
I love Rob Blake though. I mean, I hope he gets his due.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be a little more on the branch. I hope he gets his
See, Lindros is an interesting guy, too, because we've talked about this on the show even as recent as a month ago when we were talking about the Hall of Fame. He was here for the Mike Cheen Charity Classic. Mike Keane, I think I just said Cheen.
Yeah, I'm not sure who Mike is.
Maybe we'll get
Sheen's
Remus
brother?
To check that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lindros is a guy that, you know, Richie mentioned, you know, best player on the team. Lindros was the best player on the team, was dominant for a very short period of time. And, again, just like Bure and... It's interesting because the way you look at Hall of Fame, Drew, it's almost like what's your criteria of getting into the Hall of Fame? Is it just very good or is it the best? I mean,
well,
and those are subjective things.
You know, when Bernie Federico got in and Clark Gillies, like, did it move
watered
to like
it, the watered down a bit? Hall very good.
The classes are the classes, and I mean that's just the way it is. Do I think it's you got to be great to get into the conversation? So I'm fine with it.
Right, and you talked to Pat Quinn, Richie, who coached Sundin and. Very respective hockey guy. They're going to say, absolutely, Sundin should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
I'll talk to another guy, he might say, Shanahan is in. Sundin's not quite that good. And that's why it's great to have these barroom debates.
Let's go to break. Before we do, I just want to point out, I think that's the Dakota team over there. They may have been playing before.
Yeah.
How great is that? You've got an entire row being filled up by one amateur youth hockey team here. They must be over the moon excited.
I mean, I can speak to it. I remember when I played as a kid, I think we were 10.
Yeah.
And I played, around 9 or 10, played at the Winnipeg Arena.
Sure. Before a game. I did the same thing when
yes,
I was.
Yes.
Of course, I did it 35 years before you.
Yeah, I think you did it. Did you get an NHL contract after that?
You did it at the stadium where at the old Polo Grounds.
Yeah, the old Polo Grounds. The original outdoor classic.
Yeah, yeah. Look where the Great West Life Building is. Yeah. No. But, and we played on. We played
Polo Grounds or Polo Park, for the record.
Yeah, no, I know that. I realized that after.
The joke
I realized
the joke was that you're old.
Drew, I realized back in the day when they were actually horse racing there, you went, attended those. But the Jets played the Leafs, I remember, after us. And so we played that day, and then the players came to the bench, and then ended up being you got to meet Dave Andrechuk, Wendell Clark, and Doug Gilmore.
There you go.
And then Solani and Evgeny Davidov. And then we stayed that day, and then Solani broke the rookie record for points that night.
That night.
A March night of 93. Yeah.
Your encyclopedic knowledge never fails to amaze. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at the Max Bell Arena on the campus of the University of Manitoba for the Goals for Dreams charity hockey event. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon. It's time for Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
First rapid-fire question this afternoon. Hamilton Bulldogs forward and Montreal Canadiens draft pick Blake Jeffrion was hospitalized with a skull fracture after being dealt a devastating and legal hit by Syracuse Crunch defenseman Jean-Philippe Côté. He underwent brain surgery to relieve the pressure and has since been released from hospital. He's expected to make a full physical recovery. I think it's safe to say that if the equipment being worn by Côté and all players wasn't made of such hard-molded plastic, the injury would have been less likely to occur. In the course of the ongoing CBA negotiations, should the quote-unquote body-style armor equipment being worn by the players be on the table for discussion and negotiation?
Yeah, I've been saying this for years, Drew. The stuff that they're using is completely insane, and it only causes more injuries. I think equipment's always been an issue. I think how hard equipment is, and, you know, it's... You visualize it now. Don Cherry, I think 10 years ago now, taking the elbow pad and smacking it against the table. And how loud it is. It's unnecessary. And you could limit concussions and injuries. And that's the thing. Talks like those and issues like that, Olympics, those need to be... They need to ensure that they address those issues, what's important for the game, safety, and how they can make the game more exciting. Of course, talking about money. So, they'll take a back seat.
Absolutely. And this is nothing different than what we've talked about before. Every time you see one of these injuries, you don't like to see it. It happens though, and it's going to continue to happen. And you know, unfortunately, Blake Jeffrion, we hear, is doing better.
Yeah.
But it's something that, you know, this is going to take leadership from the NHL, the NHLPA, and the equipment manufacturers. And it's happening slowly. But I'm optimistic that we are going to get to that point, because nobody anymore is really not on the same page as far as safety goes. Everybody wants these injuries, the concussions, head injuries, to end. And I think I'm optimistic that, you know, things are going to start to get better in that regard.
Speaking at a sports conference this week in Toronto, Toronto Maple Leafs general manager Brian Burke said that he does not see any value in the use of advanced statistics in hockey. Is Brian Burke putting his team at a disadvantage by not subscribing to some degree to the use of advanced stats when evaluating player performance?
I mean, I think he is if he doesn't look at them. I don't think he needs to use them. I think you need to at least be cognizant of the fact that they can be helpful and examine every option to make your team better and then make your decision. By completely ignoring anything, I think you're putting your team at a disadvantage, because you're not taking into account what could possibly help your team. Looking at a stat and determining that doesn't help your team is better than not looking at it at all and determining that's not going to help you.
Well, we've all read the book Moneyball, and I bet a lot of people have seen the movie and read the book. I mean, it's proven that advanced stats do help, and they do give you insights. It's not everything. There are
it's harder,
you know,
in hockey without static play.
Exactly. Yeah. It's different, you know. But you know, it's a good comparison, a good analogy, because the Moneyball thing kind of got it into other sports. But you know, you think about it though. Hockey's played on the ice. Numbers can tell you certain things, but at the end of the day, you throw that all out the window. So Brian Burke might be putting his team at a little bit of a disadvantage. He should. I think it's always good to keep an open mind.
That's all it is.
Is out there, but don't think that, you know, all of these guys are just numbers, you know, skating around the ice. Yeah. Because the fact is, there's intangibles that make a good hockey player, you know, not just his Corsi stat.
That's right.
Pascal Leclerc, former first-round pick, eighth overall of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and then later the Ottawa Senators, has officially retired at the age of 30. Injuries marred his career. He didn't have as good a career as he had hoped. What is your favorite memory of the Pascal Leclerc era in the NHL?
I actually thought when Ottawa acquired him, he'd really be helpful, and I was wrong about that. I mean, the guy got injured on the bench, for God's sake.
That's right.
So I assume that's what you're referring to.
Well, that's my personal favorite memory, when he got concussed sitting on the bench. He was a talented
netminder who just never put it all together, and injuries marred his career, and it's unfortunate. He could have been a lot better, but... Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go in the funny way, how does a guy get, not only does he get injured, he gets injured while sitting on the bench as a backup.
Yeah, concussed.
So you don't want to laugh at a concussion, but that's, right.
it's a weird way to go. You don't want to laugh at when Mike Modano gets dropped off the stretcher, but you sort of do laugh when he fell off. I mean, let's be honest, you fell.
An evil laugh.
Well, how many years after the fact?
You can laugh at it after, yeah, so long as he's okay.
Yeah,
that's
we know he was. Yeah. Exactly.
Drew, there aren't that many Pascal Leclerc memories because he was injured 89% of the time or whatever.
But you know, Canada, though, right?
He did play for Team Canada at the World Juniors. He was very good. But, you know, probably the best memories were with the Columbus Blue Jackets because he did have brief flashes.
Dear God.
But, you know, it's unfortunate. It's another one of those guys similar to Lindros and Bury, you know, two really good players.
I just had a flash that you said there was a good memory in the Columbus Blue Jackets history.
Right.
Well, okay. Hopefully that changes that now that our buddy John Davidson is there.
Rick Nash's 41-goal season was pretty good.
That's true.
And they did make the playoffs, albeit no win. But.
Yeah, they got swept there, unfortunately. Yeah. Final question in rapid fire before we go to cheers and jeers. Last season, thanks to numerous injuries and bad circumstances, the Minnesota Wild were forced to sign 51-year-old Paul Deutsch to a one-game contract and act as their emergency goaltender. This year, the Minnesota Wild have invited 11 area goaltenders to participate in an American Idol-esque contest.
Great idea.
To be the Wild's emergency goaltender, should the need arise again.
We're going to do that for the show, for a host.
Yes, we'll need an emergency host. If you were an NHL team, what is the number one attribute you would be looking for in an emergency goaltender?
Well, someone who can obviously stop the puck would be number one. But obviously, you're looking for someone who is able to probably... I remember, you know, Dave Minuk, I know, remembers this. Joe Caligiuri, who was obviously the brother of Christina Caligiuri, plays for the U of M.
Obviously.
And he was called up. He is. I like to say obviously before when I, you know, that. But he came in and practiced with the Jets last year. But you're hoping that a guy can go from, if he's coming from a lower league, he can step in and, you know, be all right. But
my comment would be, you're just hoping he's not Pascal Leclerc. Then you're really screwed.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. All right, that's it for Rapid Fire. Let's finish it up. One final segment. You know it. You love it. It's called Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And Jeers.
No. I've never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
I'll start to my right. Ezra Ginsberg, cheers or jeers?
I'm obviously going to cheer this event. You know, Shawn Chornley.
Didn't see that coming.
Shawn Chornley of the Winnipeg Police.
That was obvious.
The Winnipeg Police Service. You know, Andrew Ladd, Mark Stewart, the captains, for getting together and putting this event on. It's going to be awesome. They're about to come out here and have a pregame skate, I believe. You know, we're going to pass the torch over to Munns and Bayak and Rick Ralph and these guys behind us. It's an awesome event, so I got to give, you know, the cheers to this event. It's great for fans and, you know, to raise some money for a good cause.
Richard Pollock.
My cheer goes to the New Jersey Devils for making their arena available to a team that was adversely affected by Hurricane Sandy, and it's a high school team that now is able to play their final games of the season or the first half of the season, whatever it may
be. Hold on, is this the first time Richie's ever cheered the New Jersey Devils on this show?
Playing at... what's the arena?
Prudential Center.
Yeah. I think that's a great cause because a lot of people are still don't have power.
Right.
So. It's a good cheer, Richie.
Exactly. And I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. All of us agree that this is a great event that we're involved with today.
Of course.
I'm going to cheer the Hockey Hall of Fame induction class.
All right.
We spoke about them. Pavel Bure, Adam Oates, Matt Sundin, and Joe Sakic.
Yep.
Cheers to those guys.
Throw in Roy McGregor in the
Yes, of course.
Our
good friend Roy McGregor.
How do we not discuss? Drew, what kind of a show plan?
Cheer to Roy McGregor. He's in the Hall of Fame now,
yes,
too.
Yes, exactly. Long-deserving, great columnist, great hockey writer, probably one of the best in Canada.
Best writers in Canada ever.
Yes, exactly right.
So I mean ever.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
our good friend Roy McGregor, of course. So cheers to everybody. It's going to be a great event. You'll hear it soon here on TSN 1290.
Also, Drew, just quickly, yeah. I know we got to get off really quickly. Cheers to Timmy here to our right.
Yeah. Yep.
Colin, Remus back at the station.
Did a great
everybody
job,
for helping
course.
Us out, all the staff here. So
that's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday afternoon live from Max Bell Arena. Big thank you to our guests, Jonathan Taves, Shea Weber, and, of course, Andrew Ladd for joining us. A big thank you to our sponsors, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. We'll also be available at tsn1290.ca. You can be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. For Dave Minuk to my left, for Richard Pollock to my left, for Ezra Ginsberg to my right, for producer Tim on site here, and producer Remus back at the studio at TSN 1290 headquarters, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks for listening. And if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, it's Jay and Dan.
You might know us from SportsCenter. Our show loops for 12 hours.
But we're here to tell you we're now taking over TSN 1290 with our brand new podcast.
And it's brought to you by Mark's Never Iron.